Welcome to the Chase Down on Leverage the Chat, your source for all Orlando Magic news. I'm Justin Rowan without my co-host Carter Rodriguez, as he thinks he's too big for the show. I am joined by a special guest to help break down the Magic's recent loss to the Celtics and talk all things about the true best team in the East, Zach Harper. Zach, how are you doing today?
You know me. I can't pass up Orlando Magic talk.
I know. Well, they're so good. I mean, Aaron Gordon's playing well. the shtick would really work.
Still alive.
Yeah. The Terrence Ross, I mean, he scored over 50 in a game once before. That was fun.
Yeah, I mean, it was a long time ago, but he did it. I
remember it. The shtick would work really well if I knew how to talk about the Orlando Magic.
I mean, I don't know that Orlando Magic people know how to talk about him right now, because there's no, like, I get it. You're happy they're hitting 40% from three, and they're like, you know what, 6-4 or 7-4 or something like that at this point. So you're excited because you thought it was going to be another, oh shit, here's a 30 win season with the Orlando Magic once again. And maybe that's not going to be it, but there's no way you buy any of this is real, right?
No, not necessarily. Aaron Gordon hero ball is very fun when it's working, but I don't know if it's going to work over 82 games. And
I'm sure he's going to shoot 55% from three all year. I bet it's going to happen.
I think that's as likely as J.R. Smith shooting below 20% from three for the year.
You know me. I'm all in. I think J.R. is doing a brilliant job right now. He's getting all the misses out of the way now. And that way, the stretch run in the playoffs, 100% shooting. You can guarantee that.
Well, it's just so weird to see JR scared to shoot at times. Like that hurts me to my in my core. Like he's gotta at least take them.
Yeah, that's like the, you know, this never happened to my dad, but I would assume it's like if you're a kid and you think your dad's like a superhero, and then like you watch him get beat up in public and it just shocks your world in so many ways. Like in a similar, like, so my dad was like this, my dad's a tough guy. He was like a champion wrestler in high school and went to college on a wrestling scholarship, and he was in the Navy, and he was a probation officer. Like he's a tough guy. But I remember he got kidney stones once. Mm-hmm. And like had to leave work at juvenile hall, and like we got this call that like, oh, you know, he had to be rushed to the hospital. We didn't know why, and we get there, and I'm like, geez, you know, my dad, like, he's toughest guy I know, and you know, I think I was like 20 at this point, 19, 20, something like that. I'm like, you know, if he's having to go to the hospital, it's like it's got to be serious. And then we find out it's kidney stones, and then I hear him like yelling in pain from the kidney stones, and it wasn't funny because he was in a lot of pain, but
like Kramer at the circus.
All right, well, this is, yeah, exactly. I was like, all right, well, this is gonna be funny later on.
Right. This is one of those rare moments where I can see him in a vulnerable position.
Right, exactly. So like J.R. Smith, like, being scared to shoot, it's rocking my world. I don't like it, but I feel like, you know, 4 months from now we're gonna laugh about this.
That seems likely, but right now the Cavs are a really bad basketball team. For anyone that didn't pick up on it earlier, we are not going to be talking about the Orlando Magic today, sorry. Instead, we got a special bad knees edition of the podcast, so I'm excited to have you on, Zach. This should be fun, to peel back the feels curtain for one moment. The EOB pod was a big reason of why I started getting into this, so it's really cool to have you on. For everyone listening, you can now blame him for needing to listen to me now. Ooh, you empowered a lot.
Well, I don't want to wear that one. That's a lot of burden on me.
Hey, if I can make your mentions a worse place, it's a good day for me.
You've done that a few times. Pretty good.
I don't believe you, not even slightly. But yeah, the Cavs are interesting right now. I'm actually making pretty decent money. I know Carter's typically the degenerate gambler on our podcast, but last couple of weeks I've done well predicting the Cavs because they're predictably hilarious. On Thursday I was like, wouldn't it be hilarious if they won against the Wizards and lost to the Hawks? And that's exactly what happened. It's the most Cavs thing possible. Not that they necessarily looked great in the win against the Wizards. I know everyone wants to point at that and be like, oh, look, when they try, they beat any team. They still gave up just an ungodly amount of points. Right now, they're not a great basketball team, but they're a little bit better when they try.
Yeah, I think the weird part is just that it, like, LeBron isn't going half speed, right? Like, he's not really pacing himself. Like, there was the whole thing about, oh, I'm out of shape, and, you know, I had a great opening night or whatever. And then the 57-point game, everyone's like, oh, this is out of shape, you know, how great is that? And, you know, everyone starts patting themselves on the back for the same joke. But, like, the problem is that he tried against the Hawks.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying in these losses, and the team just isn't – I don't want to say they're not good enough. They're just playing like shit. Mm-hmm. And so they're just not – they're not playing well enough. Like, there's clearly enough talent on this roster. JR is not going to shoot 23% from three. Jay Crowder I don't think is going to shoot below 30%, but also, like, I didn't trust that number last year.
Right. Like, coming into last season, his career three-point percentage was worse than Iman Shumpert's. Like,
yeah, like, that's, I mean, not ideal, right? No one's comfortable with Iman Shumpert shooting a three-pointer. So, like, Jay Crowder, it was kind of like, I think I wrote something maybe towards the end of the season where it was like, look, if this is Jay Crowder, like, he becomes the biggest bargain in the league on that $7 million contract. And, you know, next time he comes up from free agency, if this is the player he is, he's going to get crazy paid. And, you know, this is what the, you know, star role player for these teams are supposed to be. But it was just 1 year of good shooting. Great shooting, but it was just 1 year. And those 1 year, you know, increases, I usually like to see, you know, a minimum of 2 years before I really buy it, unless you can just tell that guy's a special shooter, which you'd never have had that idea with Jay. So, like, I don't think he's going to be a 28% shooter moving forward, but I don't know if he's going to approach 39%, you know, for an extended clip either. And then outside of that, like, Tristan just doesn't, like, really do anything defensively right now.
Yeah.
Which is surprising to me. Like, Kevin Love is shooting horribly, and they don't let him play make enough. Like, you know, Derrick Rose is whatever. I don't even care at this point. Like, he's just this entity that is strictly in the NBA to give us a talking point and to make people in Chicago feel pride for reasons beyond my, like, I just don't get it. Like,
he just doesn't seem like someone you want to rally behind. Like, I've never really understood that unless it was the hometown thing in Chicago. But outside of that, like, yeah. I just don't get it.
And he was, like, that MVP year, he was great. He was a lot of fun. And it sucks that, like, I don't know what to think about that off-court stuff that he went through last year, or at least what the trial was last year. Like, I don't – like, there was enough in that case that made me feel uncomfortable on both sides of just not understanding. And he came off just sounding like an idiot with that stuff. So, like, let's just set that – we shouldn't set that aside, but let's just set that aside. Yeah. As a player, he was awesome, and it sucks the injuries – you know, robbed him of being able to be awesome anymore. And he can still have, like, these little flashes where it's like, hey, it looks like Derrick Rose. But for the most part, like, it's not like he's a legend. Like, he's a Chicago legend, but it's not like he's an NBA legend, even with the MVP. So I don't totally understand, like, this diehard nature if you're outside of Chicago. But I mean, I'm dead inside anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Aren't we all dead inside? That's what we go to Twitter for. Because
exactly.
You get that little retweet, or you also get that review, subscription, five-star rating, you know, things that help brighten our day.
Exactly. And, like, you know, it's nice when you get the attention, but if you have, like, a 5-to-1 like to retweet ratio, you know, you're happy, but at the same time, you're like, why aren't you guys just retweeting it?
Yeah. You know? Those are the moments where you realize that you're dead inside.
Yeah, that's when you truly know. You're like, oh, wow, this is way worse than I thought it would be.
Yeah, the Tristan stuff is really kind of problematic. I mean, we did have Windhorse on the pod last week, and he was talking about how he was playing through a knee injury early in the season. And even though he's not one to typically talk about the injuries, that he felt that it was still affecting him. And with this calf strain, the hope is that it also gives him time to kind of heal up that knee injury, because as much as Isaiah Thomas coming back is going to help things, as long as he can return to, let's say, 80% of what he was last season, I think Tristan Thompson is far more important in terms of the Cavs getting out of the East, because in the past, it seemed like it would be a long shot for any other East team to overtake the Cavs and go to the finals. And I mean, obviously the Gordon Hayward injury kind of limits Boston's chances there, but without Tristan Thompson completely effective, like, he's the one guy that can actually anchor the defense on the interior. He's a big part of the matchup advantage against Boston because he's so good at neutralizing Al Horford, who right. is a tremendous player, and it's really just kind of a matchup thing when it comes to the Cavs and Celtics. So if he's not himself and Al Horford's actually able to get going, that series becomes a lot tougher. And I don't think anybody right now expects the Cavs to actually have a championship season here unless something dramatically changes. But in terms of actually getting to the finals and having a better chance of keeping LeBron this summer, if Tristan's not able to return to form and if he doesn't come back healthy and playing like himself, things could get really dicey for the Cavs in a hurry.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, it's not that I say coming back will be great because he's a good player or a good offensive player, and he could probably win a bunch of quarters that end up winning a bunch of games for them.
Right? And he's not like, Derrick Rose.
Regular season. Right. He's not Derrick Rose. Exactly. But they're like, their offense is good. Like, even right now, even with the dumpster fire that they are, like, their offense is good. It's the fact that they're the worst defensive team in the NBA. So right. I completely agree. Like, Tristan coming back, being able to play the pick and roll the way he does, anchor the defense inside. He's not a great rim protector, but he does enough while still being able to grab whatever rebounds they need or you know, take an offensive rebounder away so that, you know, LeBron can come in and get the rebounds or whatever, or Kevin Love can. Like, he does enough on that end to where if they shave off, you know, if they even just become a top 20 to 15 defense once he comes back for the rest of the season, the offense is good enough that like that should be enough to get them through the East. But imagine like how panic, well, not panic necessarily, but like how different would this feel if Gordon Hayward didn't break his leg? Right. Like if he right. hadn't broken it overnight and they were and let's say they're still like this is in a vacuum and they still won 9 straight or whatever. Nine straight. They're 9-2 right now. And Hayward's healthy and Kyrie's playing well and Horford's killing it. And Tatum and Brown look really good for young guys. Like if all this stuff's happening while the Cavs are going through all this, there would be a like maybe not panic, but you would start feeling like pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, there would definitely be concern, although one thing I think is worth noting is the Cavs came into the season all fired up. They're like, okay, we're not doing it without Kyrie. Isaiah's going to be out for a little bit. Like a lot of the talk around the team was, okay, we're going to try this season. And then it was like immediately Gordon Hayward goes down, and then you lose your biggest competition in the East, and then it's kind of like you go into Milwaukee, you get a good road win there, you blow out the Bucks on their home court, and then they just go flat. Like they go completely flat. And I think Dave McMiniman talked about how the Cavs locker room was dejected because they view that there wasn't really that competition there. And as much as like I think that can be a factor and it might impact their focus, they just can't take the regular season as lightly as they have in the past because this isn't a team that has time together. This isn't a team that knows what they're supposed to do when the games start mattering. And I know I've mentioned this stuff before, but it's so concerning that if they don't develop some of these good habits and figure out how to play with one another, I don't know if you can rely on figuring it out in the middle of a playoff series, because even without Gordon Hayward, Toronto's still a very good team. Washington's a good team. Milwaukee is a team that if you're not shooting well from the outside, which is an area where the Cavs are struggling, they're able to jump passing lanes. They're able to get out in transition. They're able to attack the paint and get to the rim at will, which is areas where the Cavs struggle. So if they don't take things a little more seriously, and I know this is mid-November, early November, but it's going to be difficult for them, and they're going to have a tougher road than they realize.
Yeah, and I think that, too, like there's a similar thing. In theory, there's a similar thing going on in Oakland, right? Like the Warriors don't look all that crisp on both sides of the or not right. both sides of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball, right? Like they're like 22nd, 23rd or something in defensive rating. They've been defending horribly, but they're also like having the greatest offensive season we've ever seen.
Right.
And it's only 10 games, but like they're, you know, talking to Steve Kerr had a great session in a scrum before a Clipper Warriors game that I was at earlier this week or last week, and he basically talked about like, look, we can't, like, this is such a long, hard road, and I've done this before, like when I was on the Bulls, you know, that third year in 97-98, like, look, like, the, it's just hard. It's hard to have yourself mentally ready. Like, I think our legs are fine. It's the mental fatigue of these long extended seasons with this high pressure situation. And, you know, we can't just, I can't just snap at these guys in November. Like, I can't do that. Like, that's not going to do us any good. Sometimes you have to wait for the team to come to you and to be ready. And my job is making sure we don't form bad habits in the process. Like, you can't flip a switch if you've been developing bad habits all season. So right. We have to find that balance. With the Cavs, it's a similar thing. Like, it's not terrible that they're losing games or that they're playing bad defense. It's that you can see the bad habits forming. And you can keep saying, like, well, Tristan's back healthy, and when Isaiah's back healthy, this will change. And yeah, maybe it will. But not if everyone on the team is just developing these horrible habits that make it even harder to work your way back to that championship level or just Eastern Conference championship level.
Yeah, and it's hard to even, like, with how bad they are defensively and how poor the communication is, it's tough to even figure out what type of game plan they're implementing. Like, I think Chris Towers had noted that Jeff Green, there was multiple possessions in that Hawks game where he was switched onto point guards, and he asked, is this a trend with the Cavs this season? I'm like, there are no trends at this point. Like, there's just there's no cohesion at all. And it's like, even if they stop the initial looks or whatever the opposing team's trying to do, all of a sudden, as soon as they get into their second and third look, everything falls apart and guys are left standing around and throwing their arms up at one another, or in Kevin Love's case, ripping his jersey in half. Like, there's just, at least they're interesting. Like, if with the Cavs, even when they're terrible, there's so much going on that at least it allows us to have content for a podcast.
Right, and I think the troubling thing is, like, all right, obviously the defense is bad. They're getting torched at the three-point line.
Oh, like, absolutely torched.
Like, we're 10 games in. They've already been outscored by 96 points at the three-point line this season. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just bad. And so it'd be one thing, like, I think there's stuff you can do if they're just giving up too many shots inside. Like, you can tweak defense rotations and get guys in front of each other. But if you're missing the rotation to recover to the three-point line, that's a much worse sign to me than giving up stuff inside. And I know the shots inside are ideal because those are the easiest ones if you're just getting layups all day, right?
Right.
Even when you're factoring in, you know, the third point from a three-pointer. But if you can't cover the perimeter at all, especially against a Boston team or a Toronto team or a Washington team, like, these teams all have shooters.
Yeah.
And they all have versatile shooters, like guys who can play multiple positions. So, like, they're going to have to be able to switch and recover and chase and, you know, run guys off 3-point line. And they're just not doing any of that. And there's a lot of time left. Like, we keep having to make these qualifiers. There's a ton of time left. And eventually it will become a point where it's like, oh, right, they've got LeBron. Like,
right.
That's the trump card in the East, right? It's like, oh, right, LeBron still exists, and you get to the playoffs, and that's good enough in the East. But at a certain point, like, you can't give up 41% of the 3-point line.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny, like, when people really dive into early season quotes and stuff like that coming into training camp. And with the Cavs, it was like, okay, this is going to be a different team. I know a lot of people, and even myself included, I thought there's a chance that this is going to be a better regular season team than last year because you got guys with a chip on your shoulder. You got Jay Crowder, who's upset about being traded. You got all these. Hey, Boogie, how's it going? but you got all these guys that are, like, pushing to remain in the NBA. You got Derrick Rose that's motivated. You got young players like Jetty Osman that want to break into the NBA. And you got LeBron who's likely pissed off and is going to be playing more power forward somewhere where he has more impact. But just so little of what they said going into this year has happened. Like, Derrick Rose said, oh, well, the NBA made me into a scorer and I'm going back to my facilitating roots. Well, his assist percentage is, like, down to 10.2, which last year was his previous career low of, like, 23. So he's just not passing to absolutely anybody. Jeff Green he's not occupying the Derek Williams slash and fast break role. They're running, like, pin downs and post ups from 18 feet out with Jeff Green. And just the pieces aren't as seamless of a fit as last year or in years past, but how they're being used, or at least the decisions they're making on the court, is just baffling. Like, you can do so much more with the talent that's on this roster, and it seems like the guys just don't know where to be. Like, I don't think this all falls on Tyronn Lue. I think it's simply guys just kind of freewheeling out there often.
Yeah, I mean, I do think Lue has some real issues as a coach, and I mm-hmm. don't know how good schematically his stuff is, and I've never been all that impressed. And you know, I don't want to take away from the title because it was amazing, but one fluke title away from him looking like a pretty bad coach, right? Okay. Like, or at least a pretty bad playoff coach in my mind. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not terribly impressed with him, but I also think, like, at a certain point, like, the players just have to be better. Like, yeah. There's too much talent to the point where people are criticizing Jeff Green.
Jeff Green's been okay.
Yeah, I'm looking at him. I'm like, I don't know. He's been like the third or fourth best guy on this team relative to what his role is.
God.
Right? Like that.
Yeah,
like,
no, you're right.
Like, I look at Jeff Green. I'm like, man, he's not even like the top 10 problems I see with this team right now, which I like. That's an amazing realization to have at a certain point where it's like, yeah, Jeff Green is like actually scoring for them, and no, he's not a good defender, and no, he's not doing all this other stuff, but like, at least he's scoring at a rate that isn't detrimental.
So you're saying this is the year for Jeff Green?
Oh, six man is locked up.
Oh God, one thing that I think, or I've been saying this since before the season, and I think they might be getting closer to that point. But what would make so much sense is just starting Dwayne Wade next to J.R. Smith at the guard spot. Like, if Rose is just going to attack on every single possession where he touches the ball and not use Kevin Love more and not rotate the ball at all, like, just let him do that with the second unit. Let J.R. Smith guard point guards as he always has done, and then Wade on the lesser of the two guards. And, I mean, Wade is simply a better playmaker. You have the same spacing issues with him there as you have with Rose, maybe a little bit better. But I just think it would help the cohesion of this team so much more. Hello?
Sorry, Boogie actually just unplugged my headphones, so I missed the I heard cohesion of this team, and that's all I heard.
No problem at all. I was just saying how the Cavs should start Wade next to J.R. Smith rather than...
I agree. Like, I think that I don't want to lump all Memphis point guards together by any means, but like, you look at what Tyreke Evans is doing in Memphis right now. I'm at University of Memphis point guards, but you look at what he's doing for the Grizzlies right now, and like, Tyreke Evans, like, this is kind of like, once we figured out, oh, this guy's not a cornerstone by any means, he may not even be a starter, like, this is exactly what you wanted out of him, right? Like, this rebirth into being like this hyper aggressive attacker. And it helps that he's shooting well from three, and we haven't seen that consistently from him over the years, but like, he's shooting well from three, he's killing in pick and rolls, like, he's just asked to go out there and attack in second units, and it's working really well. Like, maybe that is the role that Derrick Rose needs.
Yeah, like, I agree.
He's not playing well, I don't think, but like, all right, 15 points a game, 47% shooting. He's not hitting threes, and he's not really getting to the free throw line, and he's definitely not passing. But all right, if his job is just to go out there and demolish second units, I think they're like, I don't think he would be as good as Tyreke Evans has been so far, but I think there's like a middle ground there to where that's a better role. And Dwayne Wade is a much better passer, and you're right, he's like, it's the same level of a lack of floor spacing. So at least get a guy who's one, I think in theory, a better defender, especially if he's guarding twos. And
yeah, he's got more length. Like,
yeah, exactly. And you've got more length, you've got a little bit more size. JR's guarding point guards, like you said, and the 3-point shooting, I think, from JR will eventually come around to where, like, that's not really an issue anymore. And you could say that with him next to Rose as well, but you can play more inside out with Wade because he's looking to pass and because he can post up and surround him with like Love and Jay Crowder and, you know, LeBron and those guys to kind of play off that. Whereas with Rose, it's just, oh, go attack. And, you know, when you don't pass, like, either you'll hit the layup, you'll hit the floater, or we'll just have to go grab an offensive rebound.
Right. And it's so tough to watch. Like, Rose was good in the Washington game. Like, basically his game is the same every single game. He just attacks the basket on every single play, and whether or not he makes his layups kind of determines how effective he is that night. He didn't make any against Atlanta and like actively sabotaged the team every time he was on the court, but against the Wizards, like, he was better. But the effect of that is all of a sudden you have Kevin Love, who only took 5 shots the entire night, and they were all like basically corner threes. Like, a big part of Kyrie going was the hope that Kevin Love is going to be able to step up, and maybe he's not capable of being the same guy he was in Minnesota anymore. But he's still in his prime, and he's still likely able to shoulder a bigger load than he has in the past. He's still probably able to be utilized more as a passer, initiating sets and stuff like that. And I think you have a higher likelihood of doing that with Wade in there rather than Rose, who just isn't going to get him the ball. And typically when LeBron's getting the ball, unless you're spotting up as a shooter, there really isn't a lot of involvement from LeBron. Like, you don't see him run the pick and roll looking to set up Kevin Love or anything like that. It's usually drive and kick with him, which, I mean, Love is capable of doing that role, but it's just not the best use of his talent.
Yeah, I mean, the way Love has been used in Cleveland, like, drives me insane, and you got a title out of it, so, like, it wasn't all for naught, but, like, to me...
No, I'm with you.
I always thought, and some people think this is stupid, but, like, I always thought, like, he should be the number 2 guy, Kyrie should be the number 3 playing off him and LeBron, just from a pure offensive standpoint, because he is the passer, and the Kyrie point guard thing is a little overdone at this point, but because Love is such a gifted passer for his position, like, Kyrie's not a gifted passer for his position, right? Like, he can do it, and he does it enough usually to, like, you know, you get 5-6 assists a game, and that's fine from him, especially when he's dropping 23 to 27 points a night. So that's fine. But with Love, if he's giving you 3 to 4 assists per game, that's not typical for power forwards. Mm-hmm. So to be able to utilize that, you can kind of just throw off these defensive schemes a little bit better. Now with Kyrie gone, it is insane to me that Kevin Love isn't used more as like a go-to guy and a facilitator.
Right.
And to that point, like, if he was playing alongside Wade more in the starting lineup and Rose is coming off the bench, Wade is a brilliant cutter. Like, he just knows how to space the floor. Like, people have written, I think Tom Haverstraw wrote about this years ago, like, the gravity of him despite not being a shooter. There's a lot going on with how to play off that, and Love is such a good passer that he'll be able to find him in all the situations. And obviously, like, he can find LeBron, he can find Jay Crowder, he can find Tristan, and so, like, you know there's a lot you can do there. You can find JR. But with Rose, it's weird. It's like he cuts in the way of his teammates so often. Like, he'll cut where another guy is cutting. He'll cut into a driving lane LeBron's trying to create. He'll cut, like, into a Kevin Love post-up where it's like, I'm like, oh, they're going to run a handoff here. Nope, he's just in the way. Like, he's just in the way. He's just a child who's run onto the field. Like, that's what it is. Like, there is this weird thing of, like, I've never seen a guy who's still good enough offensively that you would think he would have just a better awareness of where to cut and when to cut and how to utilize that. And it's... Like, I'm not even trying to crap on him, right? Like, I can't understand it. Like, it's weird to see him cut seemingly at the most detrimental times.
Know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of when you're playing pickup with a bunch of people, and you have that one guy that his main sport was football, and he has almost no touch at all. But, like, he's just aggressively cutting all the time, and it never makes any sense. That's what Rose feels like to me.
Right. Yeah. And, like, give him the ball and let him drive, sure. But when he's cutting in the way of things, that offense that's still pretty good, it slides a little bit. You end up having to create tougher shots, and then you look like you're just coached by Jason Kidd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the – God, Jason Kidd's been bad. But that's a story for another day. But one of the frustrating things about covering the Cavs and talking about the Cavs is – if you make too big of a deal out of things, especially in the regular season, you're going to look ridiculous to some extent. But then if you just simply say, oh, everything's going to be okay, they have LeBron, then you come across as a homer. But one of the things that actually does concern me so far this season, and I think it should be concerning to Cavs fans, is with Kevin Love, just how they're not getting used to him running sets and initiating the offense. Because... No, I know Isaiah Thomas is going to come back, and he's a he's a great offensive player. But so much of what he did last year was working off Al Horford and right. using a lot of sets similar to what they could do with Kevin Love. And you're seeing Kyrie get a lot of easy looks working off of Al Horford in Boston. And I just don't think Isaiah Thomas... I don't think you can have him come back and just plug him into all the same sets Kyrie did. Like, I don't think you can just tell him, okay, work in isolation every single play and score 25, 26 points per game. Because that's what Sacramento and Phoenix asked him to do, and he wasn't as effective as a player. Like, I just think, as you mentioned before, even Dwayne Wade cutting baseline, he's such a smart cutter that I think you can take advantage of that, especially if you're running action with Isaiah Thomas and Love or LeBron and Love. But if none of those sets are being implemented, I think once Isaiah Thomas comes back, it's just going to be more awkward standing around and trying to figure things out for a while. And the only way that they can kind of minimize that and make the transition smoother is by implementing some of those sets with Love now.
Yeah, and it's not just about like making sure the guards are used to it. Like, I think Kevin Love is super talented and he's a smart basketball player and he'll be able to work it, but you can't just flip a switch and say, okay, now we're running this stuff, like, because Isaiah Thomas is back. Well, you have to run that with him and other guards so that he is in the repetition of it. He knows where he's supposed to be. He knows where everyone else is supposed to be, and guys are comfortable playing off it to where you are just plugging in a guard. Because if you were to flip that switch and just say, all right, now we're going to do all that stuff that you did with Horford, except now you have Kevin Love, who's a lot better at all that stuff, right?
Right.
Like, he's a lot better at doing all these things that you were so successful with Al Horford. Go do it, except – Love hasn't been doing it this entire season.
Yeah.
So now, like,
he hasn't done it in years.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he hasn't done it since really Minnesota. And so now you have two guys kind of trying to relearn this stuff with new teammates, and it's just too hard to do. So I agree, like, they should be running this stuff because – and I'm a Horford – like, I like Al Horford, but he's not nearly as good on offense as Kevin Love is in really any aspect.
Right.
And that's not a knock on Al Horford. It's that Kevin Love is that good offensively. They just never use him, and we've all forgotten it.
Yeah. Kevin Love's pretty damn good.
Yeah. I don't want to say they never use him. He has a 25% usage rate, but they don't use him in the ways that would be the most advantageous.
Right. And I agree with you, your point earlier about how they could have used him more with Kyrie. Like, I think they could have made everybody's lives easier. They could have made Kyrie's easier. They could have had a better, less predictable offense if they used Love more in those ways. But I mean,
you can look at too, like even looking at other teams, like look at what Blake Griffin and JJ Redick were able to do with like dribble handoff situations, right? Like they tore teams. Like, you telling me Love and J.R. Smith can't do that? Mm-hmm. You know, like, yeah. There's just so much they can do. And I'm not saying you build your team around Kevin Love. Like, you have LeBron. Let LeBron do, LeBron things. But you can stagger things to where Kevin Love is the main star on the floor when LeBron takes a break. And at least offensively, you're not losing anything. And you can do so much with that. And that was my problem with Blatt, and that's my problem with Lou, and I'm not trying to come off as like a Kevin Love homer by any means. I know I've seen what he can do up close, and they don't do really any of that.
Right, and I'm a bit of a Tyronn Lue defender. Like, I think overall he's a pretty good coach, and the accountability stuff, I always found it tough to hold him accountable for the lack of effort in the regular season and stuff, when it was clear David Griffin, the general manager, was okay with it. Ownership at the top was okay with it. It was the approach LeBron wants to do. So if it's an organization-wide decision, then it's tough to really pin that all on Lou. But when you talk about the schemes and how they're used, like, that's not something that it's like, oh, we need you to go 110%. This is simple stuff that can make everybody's lives easier, and the Cavs just simply don't do it, and it's frustrating to watch year after year. And it was funny before the season, Carter and I were talking about, oh, Lou says he's going to get Love more involved, and Carter was really, really skeptical about that, and so far he appears to be right.
Yeah, he does appear to be right. And I think too that I don't think it's time to panic, but
no,
because it is still like the East still sucks, right? Like, there's not really a good second team in the East when Cleveland gets their stuff together. But at the same time, that run has to end eventually.
Right.
Now, LeBron's playing out of his mind. And so it seems crazy to think like LeBron would be this good and the run would end. But it does have to end eventually. And
it's still a team sport.
Yeah, it's still a team sport. And like, I don't think Milwaukee is that far off. Like Boston, I don't really take seriously in that role, and that may be stupid of me, but I don't take them seriously in that role without Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, they're young, and they match up poorly. Like they're not a good rebounding team, and
Cleveland just kills them with that, right? I mean, that's something, especially when Tristan Thompson's back and he's right. Like that matchup with Al Horford is just sucks for Boston. Mm-hmm. And Washington, I think they're good and they have an amazing like small ball lineup, but they don't really have a bench, and so
right.
I'm not really all that concerned with them because I just think those guys will be spent by the time they have to get through Cleveland. Toronto. They find a way to Toronto things up at the in the playoffs. Like I really want to believe in Toronto because I love Kyle Lowry, but I'm done with that hope. But Milwaukee, because Giannis is that dynamic, let's say they get Jabari back in February and by April or May, he's good enough to play 20 minutes a night, right?
Yeah.
Chris Middleton's good. They can switch everything. They have
Chris length. Middleton's so damn good. Especially if he returns to form. Like if he's playing as well as he did like 2 years ago before he got hurt, like all of a sudden you're talking about a guy that's like in the 90th percentile as an isolation scorer, but also a great spot up shooter that can defend three positions. Like that's one of the most.
And he's a good passer. Like he sets guys up really well too. Like he can really do just about everything.
He's so good.
So then you're asking like guys like Brogdon and Dellavedova and Thonmaker and John Henson to just fill their role. Like not like go beat LeBron. Like you just have to fill your role and compete with the other guys on Cleveland's roster. Like I don't think it's that far off to think Milwaukee could be the team that overtakes them. Now this year, that seems optimistic because they do have a lot to figure out and Jason Kidd is still their coach. And I've been a Jason Kidd coaching not fan, but just like understander in the past couple of years. This year I'm watching, I'm just like, what is happening? Like this offense is Earl Watson-esque. And it's just that you have Giannis and he's that good to create everything for everybody, create stuff for himself. So the Jason Kidd part, terrifies me a little bit, but it does, like they're not that far off from being a team that at least could make a vulnerable Cavs team worry.
Especially if they get Bledsoe.
Yeah, if they get Bledsoe and they don't have to give up too much for him, like that's – I'm not a huge Bledsoe guy, but putting him as like the second or third guy on that team is huge and gives you a lot, especially like if they're going against Isaiah Thomas, having someone like Bledsoe hawking him the whole time. Like that will matter, especially if Isaiah can't get back to 100%, which I don't think he will in this first year back. So like the long story short version of that is Cleveland will probably be fine, but the run does have to end eventually and I do think there's a team that's not that far away from truly challenging them unless Gordon Hayward magically heals and gets back. Then there's two teams.
Yeah, Milwaukee's always been the team that I always felt like they were the successor in the East. Obviously, Boston putting together the team that they have, if they're healthy, they're going to be around for a while. And Jason Tatum and Brown both look so good right now. But yeah, the length and just the areas that Milwaukee is strong in really go poorly with the Cavs' weaknesses, and that's right. What it really comes down to. And there's also just the possibility that Giannis goes LeBron against Detroit in the conference finals, and you get that passing of the torch. Like he is that good that he can win a series, and he certainly looks poised to be the best player in the league, without a 3-point shot. Like he's such an outlier that he can do it against anyone.
I'm writing something on the Bucks supporting cast for tomorrow, and 46% of Giannis's shots come within 3 feet of the rim, which is ridiculous because everyone is trying to keep him from getting to the rim. But even more ridiculous than that is he's making 82% of those shots.
Good God.
Like they're trying to stop him at the rim. They're trying to keep him from the rim. Half of his shots come there and he's hitting 82%. Like it's just crazy. And like that Cavs team in 2007 sucked, right? Yeah. Like that team sucked. Like they had identities, but they sucked.
Hey, Eric Snow was a legend, man.
Right? Eric Snow was a legend. Like shout out to him. Shout out to Sasha Pavlovich and Zdeno Zgoskis. But like that team sucked and LeBron was that good. That Detroit team was really good, but they were vulnerable. Like you can kind of see the similarities, I guess it would end up being 11 years later.
Right. Right. And especially with the age of those teams. Like that was an aging Detroit team. This is a Cavs that it's instead of the flying death machine, it's the nearing death machine. Like there's reasons to be concerned.
Yeah. At the same time, that Detroit team didn't have LeBron.
No, like, no. LeBron is still just stupid good. No, that Detroit team didn't. Although I always wonder what would happen with Detroit, and this is just a complete tangent, but if they did draft Melo, like that would have been so interesting. And I've always been a Melo defender. I don't know about you, but
oh, I'm a Melo guy. Even now, like a guy that can, you know, I love guys who can get buckets, but a guy not only that gets buckets, but like he still draws the attention of a defense. And I just think that matters. Like I get all of his problems, I get all of his failures and all this stuff, but especially now as a number two guy, and he probably should be a number three guy. They got to figure out that hierarchy with him and George. But as a number two guy, like I'm all in on Melo. Even at this stage of his career, like, I'm just like that guy can score and that guy can dominate stretches of games offensively. And yeah, he sucks on defense and he's not going to move the ball enough. But if you stagger things the right way, like he can be devastating still.
Speaking of guys you're in on, you're going to be going against everyone else we've had on this pod, but I'm going to have to ask you about Brandon Ingram because we do it almost every show because I know you're in on Brandon Ingram, but as soon as he was mentioned as part of the Lakers pitch, when they said Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram are going to be the reasons why LeBron's going to the Lakers, that's when the slander came. So give me your spiel about why you believe in Ingram.
He's good. That's why. Like I don't think people realize. Like, sure, he was bad as a rookie. Most rookies suck. Even if they do well, they still suck. And I don't think people realize that. Like we see these numbers and like, oh, cool, Damian Lillard averaged 18 points as a rookie or whatever it was. He still sucked as a rookie.
Yeah,
because rookies suck. They're
and he was really older. Bad.
Right. Exactly. It's rare that rookies actually matter.
Right.
Like all they're there to do is give us highlights and give us hope. Mm-hmm. That's all rookies are there for. And occasionally you get one who, like Kawhi, who contributes to a good team.
Or Jetty Osman, who's already the best small forward on the team.
Who's like maybe the like something happened in the last game. It was in the Atlanta game. So I can't remember what happened, but I think it was like they forced a key turnover or something like that, and they cut. Or no, this is what it was. Isaiah Taylor missed a free throw.
Yeah,
like they were still playing the free throw game. Isaiah Taylor missed a free throw, and Osman, like they cut to a shot of him, and he like no one's ever been happier. Like my nieces at Disney for the first time have never been happier than him during that missed free throw. So I'm all in on Osman, but Ingram, like he sucked as a rookie. He struggled in the preseason because they're asking him to do something that he's not really fit to do. But now that the season has started, they've pulled back his role enough and asked him to attack in a certain way. Like, look, these aren't world beater numbers, but he's averaging 15 points a game on 45% from the field, 38% from three. He's a bad free throw shooter under 70%, but like the guy can score. The guy's long and he's,
yeah.
I think he'll be a decent enough rebounder in his position. I think he can move the ball a little bit better than he has. And eventually he will get strong enough to where there's not a lot you can do defensively to keep him off his spots of where he wants to score on the floor. So, like, is he going to be Kevin Durant? No. And that's what everyone holds against him. Like, I thought this guy was Kevin Durant 2.0. Shut up. Mm-hmm. Like, we make dumb comparisons. Austin Rivers was the next Kobe when he was in high school. Like, these things happen, right?
Right.
Andrew Wiggins was the next LeBron James. These things happen. We get too excited about 16-year-olds in high school. And shout out to Andy Liu. And mm-hmm. we get too excited about 16-year-olds in high school. And then we start like throwing these stupid comparisons at them, and then we saddled them. Like Brandon Ingram came out and said, "I'm Kevin Durant." Like mm-hmm. that's not what happened. So we got to stop judging players on that. Mm-hmm. But
to be fair, RJ Barrett is going to be the greatest player in the history of the NBA.
100%. I completely agree on that. But like, if you just look at like 20-year-old guy doesn't have any strength or like NBA strength playing against grown men. Being able to score the ball the way he does with this little experience, if like you don't all you can't always grade on a curve and just say like, oh, this guy's so young, look how good he is. But there is a certain point where it's like, man, this guy for where he is and where he should be, he's good. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can trust that he will, you know, progress naturally over the next 5-6 years, that's really good. Now, is that something like you know, is 25-year-old Ingram down the road going to be enough for like LeBron next summer to go, you know what, I'm going to the Lakers because look at that Ingram guy? Probably not. Like LeBron goes to the Lakers, it's probably not because of Brandon Ingram.
It's probably because they added two other stars somehow.
Exactly. Or like they traded Brandon Ingram to go get a star. Like,
right. Yeah. But yeah, Ingram, he's likely moved for one.
Yeah. Ingram for a second year player at 20 years old is good. Mm-hmm. And he's going to get better. And he's going to be really good in this league. And it's crazy to me that we just keep judging him based on how good Kevin Durant was. And right. So that's why look, I'm all in on jokes. Let's make jokes as much as possible.
Of course. Because sports are so stupid. Sports are just so dumb.
What we do is so dumb. Like, the fact that I have a career that is so dumb. Like, what are you people doing with your lives to where people like myself can have a career doing this? It's so dumb. But since I can take advantage of this at the same time, like, you look into stuff and, like, he's just going to be good. He's going to be really good. Like, is he going to be an All-NBA guy? I don't know. That seems like a stretch. Is he going to be an all-star? Yeah, maybe. Like, he could end up being that good. And at worst, I think he's like a 20 to 23 point per game scorer in his prime on really good shooting percentages and moves the ball a little bit. And defensively, like, I think he'll end up being a good player. He's not right now. But I think with his length, like, it's unlikely he's Darius Miles.
Can we just talk, speaking about this league being dumb, we got some breaking news. LeBron just on his Instagram posted the Arthur meme with the clenched fist saying mood.
Okay. Cool.
I love this league. Sure. I love this fucking league.
there's more to this.
Oh, there
Damian
is.
Damian Lillard commented saying, this post hella funny.
I see.
Not only that, Isaiah Thomas replied to it. Need me to handle something, cuz? This league is so stupid, and I love it.
Oh, it couldn't be better.
This is what I love about LeBron. Like, the subversiveness of LeBron, I think he probably does more harm in these situations than we really know, because we're not inside those locker rooms and everything. And I think this can be a really, you know, just a detrimental thing. But at the same time, even if it is, he knows how to give us something else to talk about.
He really does.
Like, the fact that we were, like, looking at him wearing a Yankee hat in 2010 and like, whoa, does that mean he's going to the Knicks? Is he trying to tell us something? Like,
and then he'd throw up the hands and everyone's like, oh, he's signing with the Nets. He's going to be with Jay-Z. Remember how big that was?
Yeah. It's like, no, he's just friends with Jay-Z. Nobody wants to play for the Nets. Like,
he's the best. And the people that have like this perception of him being like this super controlling guy that tells the Cavs exactly what to do, it's clear he's way too passive aggressive to take that approach. Like, he's always going to communicate through Instagram.
I can see him like sending a text to Kobe Altman just being like, man, I'd hate it if we traded for Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah.
Like, just some sarcastic text like that, you know, like to where Kobe's like, all right, I guess I got to start looking into trades with Phoenix. You know, like, I can see that. I don't think he's going in there going, if you don't give me Eric Bledsoe, I'm leaving next summer and I'm taking Jay Crowder with me. Like, I don't think that stuff's happening.
I'm taking Jay Crowder with me. I love it. This doesn't beat LeBron's man in the mirror picture after the Rockets lost years ago.
That was an all-timer.
I think the best, though, now that I just thought of it, was the one where it was like an animated picture of him as Batman putting on the mask.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that. That was truly the dumbest moment in our sports history.
I want to know who he like contacted to make that graphic.
God, I kind of just hope it was on some random Tumblr that he found, and this guy has never spoken up saying, hey, that was mine. Like, just some random Tumblr where LeBron is like just searching LeBron superhero.
It'd be really great.
And that came up, he's like, I'm gonna use that.
It'd be really great if, like, you know how Twitter now, when you take like the code from someone's like image or video, it now says like the source of it. If that was around back then, it was just some random guy with like 200 followers that LeBron like stole a meme from.
And it's just like via Tumblr's, you know, Beefcake 69 or something like that. Like, it was just some random weird name like that.
And everyone would be looking at that guy's location and figuring that's where he's going to play next.
Right. It's like, oh, that guy's in Albuquerque. That's pretty close to Phoenix. Maybe he's going to be a Sun.
I see the Phoenix Suns just sent the Brooklyn Nets Twitter account the Arthur meme. This night's going to get weird and fun.
This is going to get. We have like three games, and it's going to get real stupid.
Oh, and I can't wait for the aggregators to hit that. I mean, I'm one as well, but still, it always tickles my heart.
If you're aggregating that and you're not making fun of just what we're doing as a society in sports, like,
yeah.
you gotta reevaluate some things.
Oh, here's the first one. LeBron's angry Instagram post could be about watching Kyrie or a message to the Cavs.
What if he put $300,000 on the Packers today, and they're just getting smoked by the Lions? He's like, God damn it.
I had no idea football was happening, but I guess it is Monday. All right. Before we get you out of here, you have to play the little game we've had going on now. We call it Net Positive, where we look at the upcoming week for the Nets, because the Nets are obviously going winless for the rest of the year, and you need to gas up their opponents and say nice things about them. Right now they're playing Phoenix. We don't care about Phoenix. We talked about them last week. Their opponent tomorrow, though, is Denver. They're in Denver. Say nice things about the Nuggets. Say nice things about Jamal Murray, because I'm Canadian.
Jamal Murray does the arrow thing, right? After a made shot. I love that. I'm a big Robin Hood fan. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Great Kevin Costner movie. Really into archery. It's maybe my favorite summertime Olympic sport that doesn't get talked about enough. So big into archery. So big into Jamal Murray. And Nikola Jokic. You know, the internet loves him.
The internet really does love Jokic. All right, on Friday, they play Portland. Other than commenting on Instagram posts, what do the Blazers do well?
Well, Damian Lillard's new album is really good, like legitimately good. Like,
is
not
it?
Just like, hey, yeah, it's good.
Hmm.
It's not like, oh, Shaq made an album, we got to pretend this is good. Or, oh, Dwight made a joke, we have to pretend he's funny, right? Like, it's not one of those things. It's like, it's actually a good album, like front to back. If you listen the whole way through, the stories, or like the, not the story, but like the vibe of it, it flows really well. Good songs. There's just a couple of like the R&B hits that I'm not big on. I wish he would stay away from that a little bit. But as a rap album, really good. CJ McCollum, really interesting guy, obviously a killer on the court, great scorer. He interacts with me on Twitter, big fan of that. Yusuf Nurkic might punch somebody. We don't know. We don't know what he's going to do. He might wrestle a bear at halftime. He could be in a pottery class and just be really good at that. Like, he's a man of many talents. Mo Harkless, you can sing, you know, how could you be Mo Harkless?
Yeah, puns are good.
The tune of Kanye. And yeah, that's a good pun to make. Al Farouq Aminu, you can say, you've got to be Farouk and kidding me. Like, a lot you can do with this Blazers team watching them.
All right. And finally, we got the Utah Jazz, which, I mean, Utah's nightlife is probably going to take care of that game. Tell us a little bit about Utah.
Ricky Rubio. He's fun. I still love him. He's got crazy hair right now.
And now he shoots.
And now he shoots. He's been hitting jumpers since like last February, and it's a real thing. He can actually shoot off the dribble. It's real weird. I'm still trying to come to terms with it. Rudy Gobert looks like a Tim Burton drawing. Derek Favors is shooting threes now, which is weird. Joe Ingles looks like a 6'9" mechanic. what else? Donovan Mitchell, super fun. He's gonna dunk on somebody. So he's gonna dunk. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson into the rim, not the basketball. He's going to pick up Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and dunk him in the rim.
Joe Ingles really has the best dad bod in the NBA. It's not even close.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, God. The only thing that's really frustrated me with this Cavs season is the loss to the Nets. Like, that was the one that I was like, okay, really? Like, I get you're going to lose to bad teams, but why do you have to lose to Brooklyn?
Yeah, you can't hurt the draft pick like that. Like, that's really I know it's been a while. It's been like 3 years, 4 years since the Cavs were tanking, but there's gotta be some muscle memory there to know, like, the true tanking aspect of it is you make sure the pick is as good as possible. Mm-hmm. Now, the Cavs aren't tanking, but they should make it to where it looks like the Nets are tanking, and they didn't do that.
Maybe that's what they've been doing, like, since losing to the Nets. They're like, oh, well, we blew that, so now we have to make sure Orlando, Atlanta, Chicago, all these teams.
they're just trying to even it out. Oh, I like that theory. Mm-hmm. I think that's good. Now they realize we screwed this up. We gotta fix this.
Light years, man.
Yeah, no, they know what they're doing. Now, all right, now I'm in. And who knows? Maybe they're just deciding we're not going to be good this year. We're going to get two top five picks. We're really going to round. Like, you think LeBron wants to play with Lonzo and Brandon Ingram? What if we got Luka Doncic and Michael Porter? What if we did that?
Yeah, you know, and they're resting. They're resting him up. He's going to be rejuvenated. They're waiting out the Warriors. They're hoping that Kevin Durant likes someone else and joins the Rockets or something next year.
Right.
Yeah. This is light years.
LeBron's probably texting like, "Yo, man, look how good the Rockets are. Like, imagine when they get Chris Paul back. That's a champion."
I like it. I really like this theory. We're going to go with that.
I think that solved the NBA.
That's probably what Sam and Andy would do in this position, and I always ask myself that.
No, they would just say Steph better to every single theory. That's all they would do.
You're not wrong. Well, anyway, Zach, really appreciate you coming on. For all our listeners, go ahead and plug your stuff.
Talk Hoops on Twitter, FanRag Sports for the old NBA writings, and then I have a podcast, Talk Hoops with Zach Harper, a real tough name to remember if you follow me on Twitter.
It's very good. It is very good.
Subscribe to that. Thank you. The Basketball Friends, all the Leverage Chat stuff, Woz Speaks, BOM, like all that stuff. Just subscribe, leave us reviews, support our sponsors. All that stuff really matters. And so your support, tell a friend. Two things. I'm going to steal this from comedian Mike Malloy. He says, if you like us, tell your friends about us. If you don't like us, tell your enemies. We'll take their money too. that's a good way to view life, and then do the other version that Jade brought up the other day, is like, steal your friend's phone and subscribe to the podcast on their phone, and they'll never know.
Please do that. Subscribe to our pod, subscribe to all the Leverage to Chats. I mean,
yeah, sarcastic, you're all Cavs fans, right? Sarcastically subscribe to Light Years pod. Mm-hmm. Like, just do it as like they'll think they're more important than they are. Like inflate their egos a little bit so the letdown when Kevin Durant leaves for Houston, they're just devastated.
Exactly. Exactly. And man, like, honestly, I know I'm being a plug right now, but I really do love all the pods that we got going. Woz Speaks annoys me. It annoys me how good Woz is. Like, that guy's going to be a star. I don't know what he's going to do.
He's going to be on some kind of list from the government or something. Like, he'll be in Guantanamo or something. Like, we don't have to, like, it's good, but it's not going to last long because he's going to get arrested or something, he says.
Well, it's between Woz getting arrested and the Cavs becoming irrelevant for which pod's going to go down first. So let's hope LeBron stays. Let's hope
Woz gets arrested.
Well, I was going to take the different approach. I was going to say, let's hope Woz stays out of jail and LeBron stays in Cleveland. But I don't know. Maybe we do pivot to an Orlando Magic podcast. That could work.
Right, but if we have to sacrifice one, it's probably Woz.
That should be a poll. What's more likely, LeBron leaving or Woz going to jail?
That's 100% be a poll with this podcast.
I love it. All right. Well, thanks a lot for coming on, Zach. It's a lot of fun, a lot of great insight. As we've both said shamelessly a million times, rate, review, subscribe. It's the best way to support the show. Also, support draft. We're not doing a live read. I'm not going to do a live read. Download draft and use promo code LTC.
Or
TBF.
I got my own code. Tacos. All one word. Screw those other codes. We got to pump up my ego now. Pump up my use a promo code Talk Hoops. Don't use the other one. Well, no, you use the other ones. Yeah. Just don't use anyone else's outside. Yeah.
You were influenced by this pod, so go use Zach's code. That's the best way to go.
Yeah, you can add me Talk Hoops TBF on draft and challenge me to a draft in loose.
Perfect. There we go. All right, Zach. Thank you very much. Thank you to all our listeners. And as always, go Cavs.